So am I still waiting? Waiting a long time.
Waiting for tonight.
Listen to review me.
Tonight in the 20-man over-the-top battle royal, I have no friends. The most dangerous match in professional wrestling means each man out for himself. My main objective, to get even with Andre the Giant. When you tore my shirt, when you tore the cross off my chest, when you tore the heart and souls out of all those little hulksters, that was the reason I got in this 20-man battle royal. You broke the rules, man. Now there are no rules. Survive with the fittest. Bodies flying out over the top everywhere. My eyes, Andre the Giant, main concern will be focused on your 7'5", 500-pound, big, nasty body. And sooner or later in the battle royal, it's going to be just you and me.
That's right. You're going to have your eyes on this gentleman right here. But that's all you're going to have on him. He's going to have his eyes on you and his hands all over you. Because this is the greatest athlete in the history of sports.
Tonight is the first time that I've ever been the prize in a match. If Randy wins, I stay with him. And if George wins, he gets the title. And he gets to keep me. Tonight is definitely the scariest night of my life.
If she thinks she's scared, imagine how Tito Santana and Danny Bobby feel when they meet the Hart Foundation for the first time.
A 7-night main event with a world tag team titles at stake.
It may be our first time,
but it'll be their last time.
It's a fact, men get hungry. But Damien hasn't eaten in over a month, so he's ready. So why don't you join us, a special invitation from the snake. Watch us feast on 400 pounds of white meat, known as King Kong.
Welcome to Review Away. I'm John Pollock with Wei Ting, who's still recovering from his trip last weekend to New York.
Oh, I'm good. I'm 100%.
You've had a few days now to readjust to, well, I guess you're in the Eastern time zone the entire time, but it can be a world of difference when you switch countries.
I've adjusted to the colder climate, the tundra of Toronto. I've adjusted to it.
Is it that much colder here than it is in New York City?
It's a little colder.
Yeah. Well, how are you today?
Great.
Recovered. Amazing, recovered from Raw on Monday?
Yeah. Yeah. Pretty good. Ready. I'm at my best during these shows. You know?
When are you at your worst? Just in general, when it comes to work.
I'm at my worst on Mondays at about 1:25 p.m.
Oh.
That's when I'm at my
Thank God worst. We do this Wednesday mornings.
Yeah. That's when I'm at my most tired. Conversely, I think I'm at my most awake Monday nights.
Oh, you are the life of the party on Monday nights.
Yeah, but Monday afternoons, this is when I hit the bed, typically.
Well, that's why you have a coffee, I can see.
Mm-hmm.
Clearly, I went downstairs, actually, to order a coffee, and I got my guy down there, who had to ask my name again for the order.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, John, and he just smiled, like, John Cena? Like, that's it.
Oh,
John
wow.
Cena.
Well, clearly a fan. He's clearly listening. So listen,
well,
you asshole. Stop calling him John Cena.
Well,
okay?
I ordered my coffee and a bagel, and I'm waiting for the bagel. It's been about 5 minutes, and I still haven't got my coffee. And I say, hey, I'm still waiting for my coffee. It's like, you didn't get your coffee? I'm like, you can't see it. Neither can I. He got my coffee then. He apologized too. I was like, listen, you can make all your jokes, but let's not forget what the purpose of this order is. It's to get a coffee for me.
Yeah.
So, just keeping him on the ball. That's all.
Oh, man.
He's probably listening right now, holding his head down.
Just, what's his name?
I don't know what his name is. It doesn't go both ways when you're ordering. I'm going to ask his name next time. I'll be like, okay, if there's a problem with the order, can I get a name for the person I need to discuss with?
Yeah. Find out his name. Call him out on this show.
Oh, well, that doesn't sound nice.
Who cares?
Whenever we name people on this podcast, they seem to get upset.
I'm just joking. Whatever.
Wei, do you realize 1 week from today, we're going to be in San Jose, California?
Wow. Holy shit. I do realize.
It's going to be a lot of stuff to take in a couple of days.
Yeah.
So looking over what we are going to be doing.
Mm-hmm.
On Thursday, we're planning to go to Wale Mania.
Mm-hmm.
Then on Friday, we may or may not be going to AKA to chat with that team.
When do we find out about that?
Hopefully I'll hear something by minutes from now.
Mm, okay.
We've got WrestleCon. Mm-hmm. We've got Access.
Mm-hmm.
We've got the NXT show on Friday night that we are tentatively scheduled to be going to. I'm actually looking forward to that. Maybe more than WrestleMania right now.
Is that going head-to-head with ROH?
It is. Okay. Well, ROH starts at 8. The NXT show starts at 10, so there's overlap.
Okay.
But ROH already sold out their show weeks ago, so I don't know how much impact it's going to have on anybody that bought their tickets for ROH.
Mm-hmm.
But NXT sales have been tremendous,
mm-hmm.
and I'm just looking forward to that crowd watching that product on a Friday night. It might be more fun than Kaiju Big Battle was last year.
Yeah, 10 o'clock on a Friday night. Wow.
Yes.
That's pretty late.
It is late.
Pretty rowdy crowd.
Well, Kaiju was midnight, and we had to travel to the middle of goddamn nowhere to find that thing.
Are these going to be tapings?
I don't think so. I think it's just a live event, so. Though. I think you would want to tape stuff just to air maybe at some point.
The crowds
I mean,
will be amazing.
It'll be a fantastic crowd. It's going to be the biggest crowd NXT's ever had.
Mm-hmm.
So that should be a lot of fun. Then Saturday, we've got the Jim Ross show. We've got the Hall of Fame. Sunday morning, it is the live review away podcast on WrestleMania Day.
Oh, I'm nervous. So nervous about that.
It's happening at the Smoking Pig Barbecue, folks. The location in San Jose, 11:30 a.m. I'm looking forward to it. It should be fun.
Should be. What if it sucks?
Well,
what if our show sucks?
Then you know what?
All these people are going to be here judging us, thinking, I came here for this shit. This is terrible.
Then we'll channel our inner TNA production skills, and we won't do another take. We'll just air it.
We'll just have to do it.
So, that could be fun, too. A terrible podcast.
Yeah. Well, sometimes not everything's good, so you guys can come and witness whatever. It's all over.
It's on them. They're the ones asking questions. So, I mean, all you and I can do is answer these questions. It's on them.
Yeah.
Throw them under the bus if it's a bad show.
Sure.
And then Monday we go to Raw, and we travel back Tuesday. It's going to be a long week of Pollock and Ting time.
Yeah. Well, we've been through it.
And, of course, the overarching event that supersedes any one individual show throughout that week, the illustrious Grapple Kingdom.
That is correct.
How are you feeling from your tambourine attack? I know Monday you seemed a little
I'm still
out of it.
Well, I'm still hurt. Not mentally. Or sorry, I fucked that up. Not physically, but mentally. I'm still hurt.
You clearly are both.
I'm hurt.
Feeling the effects on the physical side and the mental side.
I'm hurt by both, you know, the sneak attack, the Pearl Harbor job, if you will, by Kurt Bauer.
Revenge.
As well as the betrayal of our own Brian Mann.
Well, in fairness, you did unfollow the man. You've created this unnecessary barrier between you and your friends.
My question is, I've unfollowed everybody.
You've unfollowed me.
Yes, and so
I'm sticking by you here, but I mean, you're not giving me a whole lot of reasons to.
Who do I have to? I got to be careful. Who of everybody around me now? Everybody I've unfollowed. I need to be careful. I can't trust anybody now.
You have become the Walter White of the law, where. You were this lovable personality that has gone down this dark route, and your closest people. I guess I'm Jesse Pinkman, your sidekick, your lackey, and even me. You're forcing me.
You're more Hank, I'd say. You're Hank.
Oh boy.
Yeah.
So I better be watching out for your friends. I don't give a fuck if I'm spoiling anything. If you're this far behind, come on.
Yeah.
I don't want to be Hank.
Listen, I can have all the support.
Maybe I'm Walter Jr.
You could be whoever you want to be, okay? You'd be any character, your favorite character, that's fine. But, you know what? In the end, I'm out there by myself, and you can only count on one person, and that's you. So, that's all I think I need to focus on at this moment in time.
The confidence is what really does sway me. You don't show any unwavering in your... in your skill sets, in your belief in yourself, Wei, and that is ultimately going to be the key, I think, to this particular match. Court, I can see he is second guessing himself from the mental side of things, Wei. I do think you have the upper hand in this battle.
I have a lot more incentive now after this. He ruined my karaoke session.
What were you singing?
We talked about it on Monday, but we
refresh my memory. It's late on Monday nights.
It was just Brian Mann and I. We went and I thought we were just doing a friendly little tour of New York karaoke bars, going through all of our favorite, pro wrestling inspired playlists.
And instead it was a sneak attack. He had no interest in hanging out with you. He wanted to see you concussed.
We went through, obviously, My Sacrifice by Creed, classic. My Way by Limp Bizkit. We're about to move on to My Way by Frank Sinatra, which was also a reference on...
Did Pat Patterson lay out this angle for you guys?
Yes.
That's his karaoke song.
Is that right?
Yes.
Well, it also explains why it was on this episode of Saturday Night's Main Event.
That's it. Exactly. Before we get to that, I want to take a look. Wei is down to 34 people he is following. And I'm just looking here at
Even do this. Oh, God. I'm just going to get rid of Twitter. It's caused more problems than good.
You follow.
It's caused too many problems in my life.
Mr. Wazo. I'm only going to point out ones that make sense to me. Oh, your brother? Your brother is on Twitter. James Ting.
Well, come on.
He's a big celebrity. Does he have more followers than you?
No.
No, he doesn't.
Do this. This is stupid. Why don't I go through John Pollock's followers?
You love making others uncomfortable, but when the tables turn, do you squirm? See, this is all... These are all things where you have to have a thicker skin for. You follow Neil Hamburger, who is one of my favorite Twitter accounts out there. This man is... He's kind of mellowed down a little bit. This guy will follow major corporations who will send out their brand messaging, and he'll just come back with some scathing response and just tearing apart these companies. It's great. Of course, Dave Meltzer, Open Matt, Asa Akira. What an eclectic group here. We've got Modern Seinfeld, Chris Nelson, a great Twitter account in the mixed martial arts world. Your mom bought.
Yeah, that's... It's a robot who, it's exactly what it sounds like. It'll retweet you, but replace certain words in your tweets with your mom. And it makes fun of me so hard, and I love it.
Lego ideas, and this is a weird one. What is, you had one job.
Oh, that's a good one, too.
What is the basis of this?
At underscore, you had one job. Why don't you click on it? Check out some of the... responses. This is thrilling radio, by the way.
The description is, you had one job and messed it up, plus a few other funny pics thrown in for amusement.
Yeah, so describe this for me.
I don't know how. He's got photos, and of course we've got our accelerated speed here of our internet at work. All I'm seeing is King Kong in a blue dress. So he's taking ads and other pictures and, I guess, dissecting them.
This is a terrible idea.
I'm interested in this. See, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to follow it. Because me, I am a man of the people out there, Wei. And you know why I'm never going to have someone turn on me at a karaoke place? Because I follow 1,678 people.
Let me ask you.
With the latest being underscore you had one job.
Let me ask you, though. How, when you use Twitter, how much time do you spend on it and how much do you actually get through? Sometimes I tweet. I don't hear you talking about my tweets all the time. You probably never see them because you follow so many people.
One thing I've learned from you, you send out quality tweets.
You probably don't even get to see them all because you have so many tweets to go through every single time.
I'm using it for, it's merely for scanning purposes. I'm not someone to necessarily just go into this, down this rabbit hole of just links and getting caught up in stuff. It's like I'm looking at stuff. I'm mainly just... following news.
Then you're not getting full conversations.
I'm not looking for full conversations on Twitter. Believe me, the people that contact me,
It's like downloading a 50 podcasts and listening to the first 5 minutes of every one.
Listen to some of the tweets I get here. From Alan Fong, after listening to your podcasts, it sound like you don't even like the wrestling. That's fine. How about this one? You are the Art Garfunkel, Andrew Ridgely, Marty Jannetty of Review Away, but with less talent. Way needs to go solo.
Who is the second one? Art Garfunkel?
Andrew Ridgely was part of Wham. Wow. And Marty Jannetty went Wham through the barbershop window. I like how he outlined these three examples, but wanted to qualify that I do have less talent than those three. He did want to make that comparison, but also know that in a ranking system, I would not even be meddling against Art Garfunkel, Andrew Ridgely, or Marty Jannetty in life.
That one's pretty
Let's find out about this guy. Oh, look at that. He created this account. This was his one and only tweet. I'm very upset that his three followers are now going to have this picture of me painted.
What's his name?
Well, of course, his birth certificate would read Chad P444. So give this man a follow and tell him how you agree or disagree.
That one's pretty funny.
I'm all for helping people. It is a clever one. I wouldn't read it if it wasn't clever. So that's what I get out of Twitter. Right? It's humbling and it keeps you grounded. Doesn't let your head ever get too big, or God forbid you have any self-respect.
Yeah, my problem is I find I spend too little time on Twitter now. There are actually people I want to follow, but because courts made it so uncomfortable for me, I can't follow anybody.
But you may have to if you don't prevail.
I might have to follow him, yes. It's in the contract.
What did you think about my edition, the official theme song of Grapple Kingdom? Have you heard this?
No, I haven't.
Oh, of course, because you don't listen to our shows.
I'm trying not to listen to the enemies.
Oh, my goodness. Well, with the theme of Grapple Kingdom being that a Twitter follow is what is at stake, and a man that has been so good to our show.
Oh, yes, yes, yes.
Follow Me by Uncle Cracker.
Yeah, I've heard this suggested. It's perfect.
Did someone comment to you on Twitter about this suggestion?
Somebody did, yeah.
Yes.
I love it.
What a great tie-in.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, this whole thing has kind of spiraled, this whole Grapple Kingdom thing. We had, we've got our, this very talented graphic designer, Robert Pearson, who volunteered to make an official poster for us. And I saw this thing, and it is fucking amazing.
Wow.
Yeah, so wait till you see it, John.
When are we going to see it?
I think very soon. To be honest, I think he's waiting on us.
On us? For what?
To map out the official details.
Oh, do we not have the official details? Oh, God.
You know, it'll happen. It'll happen sometime during the weekend. But
holy moly.
Official? Like, we didn't really plan this thing out, you know? Like, it's honestly, I'm taking it seriously. I'm definitely taking it seriously. There will be a match.
That's on court. I mean, the guy calls himself a failed promoter. Well, it's like part of promoting an event is telling people where and when it's going to be.
It's, you know, whatever. Whatever. I got one job, and that's to submit Court Bauer. That's all I care about.
Did you get any training in while you were down in New York City, or are you kind of
I did. I went to Marcelo Garcia's school.
How was that?
That was really cool. Unfortunately, Marcelo himself didn't teach that class. But one of his top black belts, he's got like three black belts there. This guy, Paul. I took a couple classes under him, and he was fantastic. But more so than that, because New York is such a big city, and that school is such a reputable school, you have just a lot of high-level people there at all times when you're rolling. And just to roll with like such high-level people was really cool.
So you are
very aggressive.
I like how you're traveling to go train as well, because I know that was the basis of your trip. Was much like George St. Pierre would go down to Henzo's to prepare for fights, you too are going down to New York to just really sharpen those skills, diversify your teachers.
I was mainly there to eat as well. So I didn't eat Nutella, but I did eat a lot, and I'm bulking up. I'm bulking up.
I can see you look nothing short of 154.
Yeah, yeah. I probably gained 2 pounds.
That's money weight.
And
what was the best meal you had in New York?
I had this fantastic chicken and waffles dish at this place called Sweet Chick. Sweet Chick. It was incredible. They even have a cocktail called the Christopher Wallace.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
But Christopher Wallace.
Because it's got a B-I-G ice cube, is what they said.
That's awesome.
It's like a whiskey or something. It was delicious.
Have you heard do you remember that show Dinosaurs?
Yes.
Do you know what I'm talking about?
I do know. I haven't seen the video. But
oh, I haven't either.
Earl Sinclair rapping?
Yeah. I saw that and I immediately thought that you would be a big fan of this.
Right.
This combination. Did you ever watch that show, Dinosaurs?
I saw bits and pieces, yeah.
Yeah, I didn't. That one kind of missed me as a child. But all right. We have deferred enough. I felt the need to bring everyone up to speed.
I think John does these to just, like, wake me up, you know?
You're sometimes very Greg Valentine-ish. Great worker, but sometimes it takes you, 10 or 15 minutes to really get the juices flowing, and I feel that's my job here.
There are a lot of people who just, like, wonder why. Well, you guys spend 20 minutes talking about nothing before you get to the review. Why would I want to hear that? But there's a method to all this, and that's John basically warming up the engine in me.
Sometimes Paul Simon, George Michael, Shawn Michaels, they all had to get those juices flowing, and they would lean on a certain somebody. Right. And I like to think that you are our version of those three to my lesser self.
Paul Simon sometimes hates being awake at 1:25 p.m. on a Monday afternoon. He needs our Garfunkel to whatever bullshit for 20 minutes.
Well, we're now going to chat. Oh, look at that. It's got an interview that I'm going to have to conduct later today. With UFC headliner Ryan LaFleur, who will be headlining the UFC Fight Night card on Saturday night in Brazil against Damian Maia, a man who I know Wei Ting has studied, broken down his jiu-jitsu game, one of the many influences that Wei is adopting for Grapple Kingdom.
I haven't done that.
All right, let's get into the show. To this week, we are reviewing Saturday night's main event, the final show the final major show before WrestleMania 3 that year. That is going to be the subject of our review next week. But tonight we take a look at this particular card, which was taped February the 21st of 1987, airing on March 14th of 1987, the day that young Ting Mon turned 3 years old.
Oh, man.
Do you remember being placed on the couch next to James Ting and you two watching this big 90-minute special, getting ready for WrestleMania 3.
Do not remember that.
Nope.
Never happened.
You don't remember your third birthday? Do you remember your threes?
No, unfortunately. So it's a total waste. If you got a three-year-old at home, anytime before the age of five even five, don't, even honestly, until they're 15, don't do let them do their own birthdays. Just don't do birthdays.
What a massive inefficiency in human beings that typically, the first 7 years of your life, you're essentially not even here.
You're asleep, yeah.
Like, it's a major defect your brain doesn't really start processing any memories, any thoughts
pre
7 years old.
I wouldn't say it's a defect. Those are also very important years where you learn a lot of things.
What did you learn at the age of three? Between three and four, what was the major addition to your life?
I don't know. How to count, how to speak.
You're guessing that you did those things between three and four.
I'm pretty sure I learned how to speak around that
age. You probably had learned before three.
Okay, so
what was between three and four?
Oh, those specific years?
Do you remember your first words? No, of course not. These are almost more
somebody
just...
Somebody will tell me, though. My parents might be able to tell me.
Yeah, you got to rely on others.
Listen, those are...
Imagine if you were born with the capabilities that you have now. Imagine if you were born and you were automatically 10 years old.
What are you talking about?
It's a waste of 7 years of your life. That's all I'm saying.
What are you talking about? I don't understand.
I'm saying the years of 0 to 7.
They're a waste?
Of course they are.
Okay, but you wouldn't be who you are at 7 years old without the years from 1 to 7. You wouldn't be your size. You wouldn't be...
It's just an excessively long training wheels period for you. 7 years to get going?
Well,
come on, look at all the things humans can do. And yet, we can't progress at any kind of rate that gets us to our formative years. We've got to rely on sleep to keep going.
You're so eager to be productive that you'd be willing to sacrifice the first 7 years of existence?
In a heartbeat.
Okay, well.
If I could have been born 12, I would have. Would have been great.
With the
caveat special. That I could take those 12 years and attach them to the back end.
And just
they'd be
lazy.
Those 7 years would be so much more effective at the end of your life than the beginning of your life.
What the fuck is in your coffee, man? You're just, I don't know what, you're talking nonsense here.
No, I'm talking fact. And I'm talking logic.
Nothing logical about anything you just said.
Well, you know what? I should tweet about this stuff more, and then maybe I will capture your imagination once again. That's my goal for age 31. That's my progress I'm going to make.
Yeah.
Getting you to follow me.
Well, we're 31 now, both of us.
Yeah, we're 62.
We're play button.
Yes. We're play button, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And when I was 2, I wanted to be fast forward button. Get to those big years.
Okay.
How the hell did we get from that conversation to this? That's right. It was Wei Ting's birthday in 1987, and he was not watching Saturday night's main event. But millions were, because this thing did an 11.6 rating on NBC.
Wow.
Holy shit.
Sounds like a big number.
I guess we should address right off the top, because I was tweeted this by numerous people. And during this time, the FCC had this restriction when it came to broadcasting on networks of what you could be selling people on these particular shows. And that is why they could not hard sell WrestleMania 3. There was no buy this show on Sunday, March 29th. It all had to be danced around. And that was it. It was this FCC block, essentially, that was put in place that prohibited them from doing this. And one of our listeners even tweeted Dave Meltzer this question and then sent us the answer so that we would be ready.
Well, thanks for doing that.
So it was kind of funny to watch. Did that hinder this show at all for you, Wade? Did this at all hurt your interest for WrestleMania 3? Because I thought it was, you watched this and yeah, they couldn't directly tell you buy this show, but my God, at the end of the show, did you not want to see Hulk Hogan and Andre the Giant?
Mm-hmm.
Did you not want to see Ricky Steamboat and Randy Savage?
I mean, didn't hinder my own, attention, because we were watching this with the specific intent of leading up to WrestleMania 3, so I was well aware. But at the time, I imagine that the idea of doing this is to capture the casual audience, and if the casual audience, I don't know how much in the public, knowledge that there was that this event was coming, but I don't know.
Well, the show started off. This was the ultimate show for the ADD wrestling fan. I mean, you want to talk about the Attitude Era and Crash TV, where there were millions of angles and really quick segments. I mean, this wasn't like there were massive angles in every segment, but my God, they did not let you breathe during this show. This was the fastest hour, 5 minute program without commercials I've ever watched.
It was kind of fast.
Look at these notes. I've got 1, 2, 3 pages of notes for an hour long show because there was so much.
I'd say for an 80s show, yeah, definitely.
Wow. It started off in typical Saturday night's main event fashion with promos off the top. It was our first of like 12 dozen promos from Hulk Hogan on this show, vowing revenge on Andre, revenge for tearing his shirt off. You broke the rules, man. And he's focused on Andre's big, nasty body.
Mm-hmm.
Fucking shit's going down on NBC.
Mm-hmm.
Then we had Andre the Giant with Bobby Heenan. My favorite moment of the night was Elizabeth, who a rare interview or a rare promo from Elizabeth saying that tonight is the first time she's ever been a prize in a match, and it is the scariest night of her life.
It was the most typical damsel in distress type of verbiage. You know, she's just so helpless. Oh, God, please help me.
There is the metaphor of the trophy wife. This woman was literally a trophy during this match, complete with being put high above the ring for everybody to fight for. Mm-hmm. I mean, this was...
people loved it. People bought into this.
You want to be upset about the Divas today. Could you imagine this flying today? This woman,
it's incredible.
We will fight over ownership of this woman.
I would love to see a company today do this in reverse, where you fight for the ownership of a man, a male.
That could be coming to Lucha Underground at some point.
Sure.
They might venture into that territory. Jimmy Hart and the Hart Foundation. They will be defending their tag titles tonight. And then we had Jake Roberts, who is with Damian, who has not eaten in a month. So not only sexism, but we also have animal cruelty off the top of this show. Starving Damian, who will feast tonight on King Kong Bundy. Mm-hmm. What a torturous path for a 5-minute television match. Poor Damian. And then we go to Vince McMahon and Jesse Ventura, our commentators for the night, with Vince joking that Jesse is wearing Damian's sister tonight because he's all decked out in snakeskin. Vince McMahon, what did you think of him on this show?
I actually really liked him.
He was so, like, into this. I mean, this was everything to him. I watched this, and you could not help but be energized from his energy.
Mm-hmm. Yep. He's certainly not the Jim Ross type of announcer, you know, which you would probably get over on the other product. But I think Vince just adds, he's able to hit different frequencies with his voice. He's able to go really low, then he's able to go really high. And, you know, he's able to add his own unique quality to, and when you're watching these 80s shows, I don't think they'd really be complete without hearing that type of voice and his delivery.
Everything about Vince McMahon just screamed the 80s. Loud, over the top, gimmicky. But man, did this guy, it was just impossible to not get into things because he was just hitting you over the head with just what you are watching in front of your eyes. I mean, in a lot of ways, he was the perfect pitchman for the WWF.
Sure.
And it was his vision at the time, and he was the one that wanted to be out there selling it to you. Yep. And I always thought him and Jesse had a very good chemistry together. Gene Okerlund is with Hulk Hogan in the back for promo number 2. They play up tonight will be Hulk Hogan's first confrontation with Andre the Giant, which eliminates some significant portions of wrestling history outside of the WWF, and saying that people have questioned waiting for the singles match and why they're doing this battle royal tonight. This was almost a modern version of yelling at the internet here, people that are criticizing these two having a match before WrestleMania. But Hogan just clarifies that if you are complaining about Hulk Hogan not waiting for WrestleMania, then you aren't a Hulkamaniac. Because Hogan lives in the danger zone, and he is pissed about Andre the Giant and this man turning his back on Hulk Hogan and all of you Hulkamaniacs.
Hogan certainly has a unique intensity about his promos, and I feel like, again, watching this, I never grew up with Hulk Hogan in the 80s. I know a lot of people did. And you can understand why he became such a success. He certainly had a very unique look and a very unique charisma. There's just something like you're scrolling around the channel and there's this big blonde, bald, yellow, tan man wearing yellow. Tan man wearing yellow, just screaming like he's emotionally at the top of his lungs, angry about something. He's angry that his shirt was ripped off. Whatever. And you just can't help but be captivated. And when you watch it today, it's so over the top, but it's also very. I mean, there's a feeling of nostalgia, but it's just like perfect for the time. Oh God, look at that face! John just pulled up a screenshot of Hogan.
This was from Saturday night's main event. I mean, how can you not be captivated when you're flipping through NBC and this dude shows up in place of Saturday Night Live?
Yeah, like just that terrible hair, a terrible mustache, and just big bulgy eyeballs, so much sweat everywhere. It's very captivating.
Then we go to footage of Randy Savage and George the Animal Steel from January of that year for a show in Hartford where Savage tossed Steel over the top to the floor, and then George Steel would take Elizabeth, which Ventura flat out calls a kidnapping, but Vince says she is in the arms of someone who cares. I will say, throughout this show, Jesse Ventura, he would always point out when the babyface announcer was being a hypocrite, and my God, did he point out some questionable morals here that we were condoning, such as George the Animal Steel just taking off with a woman in Elizabeth.
Well, I didn't really understand who was... So George Steele was a babyface here.
Of course, yes. The lovable babyface who everyone felt genuinely cared for Miss Elizabeth, while Randy Savage only saw her as an object.
And you show it by kidnapping.
This was a love story at the core of things. And they had continued this. This was the match at WrestleMania 2, so they had gotten lots of juice out of George.
She didn't seem into this at all. She didn't want his attention.
Well, this was the scariest night of her life coming up. Okerlund is then with Savage and Elizabeth, and Savage refers to Okerlund as a duck pin, and he is going to take out that, quote, hairy bozo. He's going to keep the Intercontinental title and Elizabeth, mentioning the title belt first, wife second, and then threatens to break Gene's neck. Savage then enters the ring. We go back to Gene Okerlund, who is now just with Elizabeth, when George Steele walks in, acting like an idiot, essentially, which is how he was portrayed at the time. This man who was
like a Neanderthal.
He just starts saying the word manager over and over again. And then Steele comes out to make his entrance. We go back yet again to Gene Okerlund simply wishing good luck to Miss Elizabeth, who gets her own entrance. She comes out for the match and is placed in one of those chairs that, like, a tennis referee would sit in that was elevated above the ring at ringside.
Like a lifeguard's chair.
Exactly, yes. So the match begins, and Savage comes off the top with a double axe handle to George Steele right by the chair that Elizabeth is sitting in to start the match, and then sends Elizabeth to the back when Ricky Steamboat appears at the entrance, blocking Savage and Elizabeth from exiting, and leads to Steele attacking Savage from behind in the ring. We go back into the ring, and Savage's head is sent into the exposed turnbuckle that George Steele, he tears open the turnbuckle padding. Savage hits him from behind, hits a scoop slam, hits another double axe off the top, but George Steele bites the bicep of Savage as he goes for a clothesline. He opens up another turnbuckle, throws the foam at Randy Savage, and then he proceeds to go help Elizabeth. Savage attacks him on the floor, drops the large chair on top of George Steele, and then Savage returns to the ring and wins with the fastest countout in recorded history. This had to have been 2 seconds. And George Steele was counted out at 4:22, and Savage keeps his Intercontinental title going into WrestleMania.
You know, again, not much of a match with some of these 80s shows. You know, nothing to really talk about here in terms of work rate or anything like that, but it was just more so the intensity of the crowd for these characters in this storyline. This is as somebody who, you know, never really followed at this time, when you think about Savage and Steamboat, you never hear about the backstory. Nobody ever talks about the George Steele, Miss Elizabeth stuff. They just talk about how great that match was. And I think there's sort of a reason for that. This is really little importance to the legacy of that match.
It was interesting. They did do a really big angle with Savage injuring the throat of Ricky Steamboat, and it was brought up in passing during one of the promos on this show, but that really wasn't played up at all. It was more just focused on the match at hand and not so much going back and explaining just the build-up to this Savage-Steamboat match. They do fight in the ring afterwards, Savage and Steele, with Savage tossed over to the top, and then George Steele holds up the title. And then we went to the WWF slow-mo replay to go over the match.
Fancy.
The slow-mo replay.
Fancy.
Yeah, heavy technology at the time at Kevin Dunn's disposal. We got another Hulk Hogan promo, this time doing the his little curls here with the...
The
whatever you call it.
The curler.
And just chanting out names that he's going to be going after tonight like a madman.
Yeah, what a promo. Just him flexing and screaming, Andre, Andre, Andre.
Is it possible to give out a Scott Putski award to the entire roster, the entire event? Because this whole show felt like it was on the Scott Putski level. It just, everything felt ridiculous.
Swollen.
It was a swollen show.
Yeah.
The crowd reactions, Vince McMahon, the roster, just everything. This show screamed 80s excess.
You can, and I'd be perfectly okay with that, but I feel like any show with Hercules on it, it's
Orndorff.
There's no other candidate, in my opinion.
Hercules was a man. He's really kind of coming to his own during some of these reviews over the past year as we watch more and more of Ray Hernandez.
Double winner on this show.
Hercules. The 20-man Battle Royal was next. This made it really easy. They had text come up on the screen of every participant, which allowed me to pause it to write down the entrance. So, wait, look at this murderer's row of entrance in the Battle Royal. Of course, Hogan and Andre the Giant, the focal points. Hillbilly Jim, Outlaw Ron Bass, Sika, Haku, Tama, Lanny Poffo, Hercules, Butch Reed, Paul Orndorff, Billy Jack Haynes, Coco Beware, Nikolai Volkoff, Blackjack Mulligan, a very young accent smash in comparison. This was when Darso didn't even have his hair growing out. Honky Tonk Man, the Killer Bees, and Jim Brunzell, B. Brian Blair. So those were our 20 men in the Battle Royal. Gene is with Heenan and Andre. Heenan cuts a promo on Hogan, never giving Andre a title shot. He's going to get his hands on Hogan, and this led to Andre uttering the words, "Hogan, I want to." That was a terrible one.
Pretty good.
Yeah, not really. But hey, they let Andre speak.
Yeah, I think those two are a great duo, and you know, for I guess present day reference, they really remind me of Brock and Heyman today.
Very much so.
A guy who's really the loudmouth, who does all the talking for the strong, silent monster, who only says a couple words or makes loud noises at the end.
And then Hulk Hogan would be Roman Reigns.
Yeah, sure.
Direct parallel from Hogan and his level of popularity to today's.
No, I wouldn't compare Hogan to Roman Reigns.
Vince is Vince goes on and on here about Andre's former sense of fair play and all that Andre did for mankind.
I can remember when Hulk Hogan was attempting to become champion of the world, and Andre the Giant right there at his side all the way. I can remember Hulk talking about how he chose Andre as his role model in his quest for the title. How Andre would conduct himself in the company of children, his kindness to them. How he would show his sense of fair play in as well as out of the ring. His enormous pride in himself and for mankind. But I'll tell you, boy, has Andre taken a detour. And don't just blame Andre's conduct on Bobby the Brain Heenan, because down deep, Andre had to harbor resentment. He had to harbor jealousy. And whatever dark secrets Andre holds in his heart, not just Hulk, but I think I can speak for almost every fan in the world, we've all been thrown to the mat by Andre's recent actions.
And he is just disgusted at this man for his moral compass turning 180 degrees, and how Earth, mankind, is now in jeopardy because of Andre's actions. I mean, this was a heinous turn in Vince McMahon's eyes.
What has he done for mankind?
Well, I mean, he was the eighth wonder.
Then what'd he do for us?
Made us all wonder why he did these despicable acts towards the end of his career to draw an incredible attendance at the Pontiac Silverdome. Business was on his mind, not mankind, and not fair play. The heels all go after Hogan, and the babyfaces all go after Andre at the start of the match. And this was essentially Hogan and Andre on just a showcase here to dump everybody out. Honky Tonk Man's thrown out by Hogan. Then Andre eliminates Sika and Haku. The best elimination of the entire night was Andre. And this man could do just about nothing at this stage of his career. But what they gave him was a hip toss and a headbutt to the back of the head. And he proceeded to headbutt Lanny Poffo, who his head may as well have served up as a watermelon, because Lanny Poffo did this blade job, which he talked about years later. It was a call made by Gorilla Monsoon, pitched this idea to get the headbutt over, and they wanted Lanny Poffo, for whatever reason, to be the guy. And Poffo goes to the floor, and he looks like he has been just shot in the face. The blood is pouring down this man's head from this blatant headbutt. And then, just to make it better, they come out in 1987 with a gurney that was straight out of the show MASH, and they take this wounded soldier to the back, and it looks like Lanny ain't gonna make it. He looked dead.
Oh, that was really good.
That is how you get a maneuver over. As silly as that headbutt looks, where he could grab the hair.
Yeah.
God, they made this look like the most devastating maneuver ever.
Yeah, they made Lanny Poffo look like he was
dead. Done. We'll never see him again.
Concussed, skull crushed from this horrible move gone wrong. And totally, they totally milked everything they had with it, you know, capturing the blood and, on him and attributing it to Andre. I thought it was perfectly scripted and perfectly executed.
Dare I say it was genius. Hogan throws out Ron Bass. Andre hip tosses Mulligan out. Volkoff is then out. Andre throws out B. Brian Blair. Then Orndorff and Hercules whip Hogan into Andre. They kept them apart. They didn't even touch up until this point, and it led to a stare down and getting everyone excited that they're finally going to collide. And Hogan lands two punches, but then immediately the heels jump Hogan, and then Orndorff is scoop slammed out, and while he's distracted, Andre grabs Hogan, hits him with the dreaded headbutt to the back of the head, and tosses out Hulk Hogan. Vince McMahon, recapping this elimination, may serve as my favorite Vince McMahon call ever, where he gets so into it. And there is the Vince McMahon voice. This was Vince McMahon plus 10, where he talks about Andre throwing him out of the ring. Look at him, tossing him as if he's garbage. He went nuts here during this call. It's great.
Yeah, he just the way he's able to manipulate his voice to hit those different registers. There's a very unique quality about him.
They go through the commercial. Andre then eliminates Brunzell. And then all of the guys gang up and eliminate Andre. I was stunned by this.
Yeah. Yeah, in hindsight.
I wasn't stunned because this was a show that took place 30 years ago. But just watching this, why shouldn't Andre have just killed everyone here and won? Do we really need to watch the rest of this? I mean, this was essentially like you're building up Andre. He eliminates Hogan and he eliminates all the geeks.
Yeah. Once, you know, the focal point of the match, that being Hogan and Andre, were those two that were left, were out of the match, the rest wasn't really, didn't feel important at all.
So he's out. Yeah, the steam for this match is just gone. And they had Hercules eliminate Tama. Then Axe was out. Hillbilly Jim was out. Our final four. Smash, Hercules, Billy Jack Haynes, and Coco Beware. Ooh.
Who's going to get it?
Coco was tossed out by Hercules. Haynes then ducks a Hercules clothesline and throws Smash out. And then it's down to Billy Jack Haynes and Hercules, who would have a match at WrestleMania. And Bobby Heenan distracts Billy Jack Haynes, allowing Hercules to throw him over for the victory. Hercules gets the win. Your favorite.
Yes, congratulations. Yeah, I really like the idea of the Battle Royal to set up Hogan and Andre being in the same ring together and being very close to a confrontation but not actually touching. I thought they all did that really well, and I thought the crowd reacted perfectly to in anticipation for the match itself. But like we talked about, it is kind of interesting why they decided to eliminate Andre.
Especially because a big part of that WrestleMania build, and this was completely fiction, but they build Andre as undefeated going into WrestleMania 3. So I don't know why you would choose to do this for such a small prize in Hercules getting a Battle Royal victory for an underneath match at WrestleMania. I mean, Andre and Hogan was, say what you will about any other match on that card, that was the match that was drawing for WrestleMania. And on something so big as your NBC special, my goal would be to make Andre look the greatest threat Hulk Hogan has ever faced. And having him eliminated in this Battle Royal,
it didn't make him look weak, though. You did have, like, 10 guys you needed to
eliminate. But I wouldn't argue that this was a great big victory for Hercules afterwards.
Yeah, no.
It was very little reward, and the risk was to, I mean, I just didn't see the need to eliminate Andre. So Okerlund is then with Andre, and they emphasize the fact that it did take 8 wrestlers to eliminate him, but only one giant needed to eliminate Hogan. And Heenan comes in. He just says, "We won," by putting over Andre. And the fact that they eliminated Hulk Hogan means they won. That was the ultimate takeaway of this Battle Royal.
I thought Heenan was just so good.
Oh, he was fantastic.
And here, you know, even in a setting like this, right after a match, coming in, hair disheveled, just coming back in time to cut Andre off and just cut a... And
the man looked like he had just gone through labor.
He just seemed like somebody who was always on and didn't really need that time to get into character. He was just always that character.
Okay, now one big issue here was immediately after this, we were going to have a match where Heenan is in the corner of King Kong Bundy in a completely different outfit. Hair is perfect.
Yeah.
And was kind of calling attention to the fact that this was a bit of bit out of sequence.
Out of comb.
I guess so. And a shower. So afterwards, the announcers just highlight the Battle Royal. Okerlund speaks with Jake Roberts, who says he has timed the cycle of Damien to be very hungry, and they are going to satisfy that hunger with King Kong Bundy. So Damien is coming to eat this man. That is the storyline of this match. Heenan is in Bundy's corner, and they cut to a fan who's got holding up an LJN figure of King Kong Bundy.
Yeah, which you probably owned, right?
I did have a King Kong Bundy one. When I played with those as a little kid, King Kong Bundy was always the heaviest one. Like, this was a solid weight attached to an action figure.
Should be also be the most expensive one, considering the amount of material you use.
I remember my brother, he just got out of control one day when he was like 6, and he took the King Kong Bundy thing, and he went to do a pile driver to King Kong Bundy up in the air, and dropped him, and broke our plastic ring, the WWF ring. I think I hit him in the head. He's like, what were you thinking? Like, that's the King Kong Bundy fucking figure. Weighs goddamn near a pound. And you just drop it onto the ring. And we had to, like, duct tape the ring. Goddamn it. It went from fucking the WrestleMania setting to, like, a backyard Federation ring. I was furious that he broke our ring from such a stupid maneuver.
That is
didn't protect his head.
Oh, that is,
crashed right through it.
That is hilarious.
Fucking King Kong Bundy. That's what I always think of when I see that at that particular figure.
Who owns the Hogan figure? Is that yours? The one that's in the office?
Oh, none of those are mine. I don't know whose those are. We have a bunch of the figures that are just hanging around here for like set props.
There's like a figure here of Hulk Hogan, and for some reason his nipples are painted over with whiteout. I always wondered why. Which kid would do this?
I have no idea.
Put pasties on Hulk Hogan's bot nipples.
No, maybe he was showing early signs of gyno.
Okay.
And someone was aware of this. I always felt that you could get some great, like if you were to do like a kind of a retro kind of line of toys where it's all modern talent, but as LJN figures.
They've actually done that.
Have they?
Yeah, they did that like in the mid-2000s. And you couldn't even find like a Matt Hardy LJN figure.
WWE did this.
Yeah.
Huh. I'm surprised that I could see like tons of older fans just buying them up just out of nostalgia because.
Yeah, Jax did this, I believe. Huh. See, you could pull it up for you.
Look at you on top of shit. Huh. Well, there you go. I guess these didn't do that well because they never continued these.
Would you really have bought one?
I wouldn't have, but I would think a large amount of people would. Like this dude in the crowd, 28 years older, that's maybe.
True. Perhaps.
So the idea here was, first we had this wacky promo from the Hart Foundation in this heart like wipe on the screen with all three of them giggling about tonight being their first time.
It's my first time. Is it your first time?
It's my first time. Is it your first time?
It's my first time.
It's our first time.
Yeah.
Each of them saying it's their first time. It's my first time. It's their first title defense. But we were given the impression that they all might be having sex in the next segment.
It's amusing to see, especially Bret Hart in this type of scenario because
giggling and laughing.
Well, I thought the other two were incredibly fitting for this type of character in Anvil and Jimmy Hart. This kind of loudmouth, evil, maniacal type of look. But Bret didn't really suit that at all. He just kind of seemed like the more quiet, you know, not as emotive type. And to see him try to act like Anvil and Jimmy Hart was kind of amusing to me.
Bundy is afraid of snakes, as pretty much all the Giants were when they would face Jake Roberts. Bundy overpowers Jake, pounds on him in the corner. Roberts starts to come back, and then Heenan runs off with the snake, following Jake then follows after him. They come back after the commercial break. Jake has returned with the snake. No count out during this time, unlike our Intercontinental title match, the referee much more liberal with the count. There's a clothesline. Jake goes down. Shoulder block. Bundy then misses Jake. Both men are down on the canvas. Jake makes his comeback. He goes for Damian. And the referee goes to stop him. So Jake knees the referee in the gut, forcing a disqualification. And then Bundy attacks Jake, misses a jumping elbow drop. And Jake hits the DDT for a huge pop on Bundy. And Ventura came off here just disgusted at the kidnapping of Elizabeth, referees being attacked, and then chasing a referee off with a snake. I think Jesse Ventura was just sick of this double standard for the baby faces.
Jake just, like, had enough of this referee. Just had to just say, fuck off. Let me just finish this match.
Let me use my reptile on this human being who I have said is going to... I have been training him to eat this man. Let me use him for that purpose. I have starved him long enough. He's going to feast on Bundy.
This is, I thought, an example where the slow-mo worked to their disadvantage because this DDT clearly... he clearly wasn't holding Bundy's head all the way in.
Well, didn't want to break the ring with his head. And what would they have done for the rest of the taping? There was footage of the Hart Foundation beating the Bulldogs for the tag titles back in January. This was where... Tom Billington was largely just wheeled in, and I say that pretty much, that's pretty much what it was. This guy was in no condition to be wrestling, but they had to drop the tag titles, so he was a mess, and they dropped the titles, and then he was racing to get back for WrestleMania for the big payday, and he outlines all of this in his book, but probably had, and then got paid something like $50 for this television taping where he dropped the titles as he was just physically a wreck at the time. Okerlund is with the Hart Foundation and Jimmy Hart. They have hired Danny Davis to be their official observer at ringside. And Okerlund says this is an assault on the integrity of this great sport, having Danny Davis, this former referee who has aligned himself with these heels, to now be an official observer at ringside for this upcoming tag title defense. The integrity of this great sport.
What was he wearing here?
His heel Danny Davis outfit.
Which was?
Vertical lines.
Like a,
it was like referee stripes.
Like a striped dress. Like a striped spandex dress.
Well, because he was, you know, he could not be trusted.
Yeah. Yeah, makes sense.
What's the saying? A leopard can't change his stripes?
Hmm. Yeah.
That was the metaphor here. The deeper theme of this maniacal Danny Davis. The Hart Foundation defended their tag titles against Tito Santana and Dan Spivey, the future Waylon Mercy, getting a tag title shot here. Their first time.
With Tito Santana.
With Tito. So the Hart Foundation popping their cherry with Spivey and Santana. They double-teamed Spivey. They were tagging in and out, keeping Santana away as he tried to run in. Spivey gets to the corner for the hot tag, and then Brett is thrown into the turnbuckle chest first, the usual chest first bump he would do into the turnbuckle. There was a forearm delivered to the anvil, and then they knocked Danny Davis off the apron. He hit a flying forearm to Brett, and then Tito applied the figure four leg lock. Davis gets the megaphone, and as the referee is distracted, Danny Davis comes in, cracks Santana to break the figure four, and Brett gets the pin at 5.5 minutes. As the observer, Danny Davis leads to the title victory for the Hart Foundation.
Yep.
Not much to this match.
No.
I mean, it's hard-pressed to say there was a good match on this show. This was largely promotion for WrestleMania and getting to see the stars take on other stars, which was still a novelty, certainly in 1987. Okerlund is with Steamboat in the back. They bring up the crushed larynx from last year, but says he is 100% now. He says he knows everyone is going for his throat, but he breathes fire, and it gets hotter and hotter, which sounds god-awful painful. Mm. If you're breathing fire, and it keeps getting hotter, you need a Halls or something like that. Savage then shows up. And he gets sent away from the ring, and he is going to do commentary with Vince McMahon and Jesse Ventura. I thought this could be great. So we had the Iron Sheik, accompanied by Slick, taking on Ricky Steamboat in our final match of the show. There was a skin-the-cat spot, an atomic drop delivered to the Iron Sheik. Sheik then hit a vertical suplex into the ring for a two count. There's an abdominal stretch applied and then a hip toss from Steamboat. He scoop slams him and then hits a chop off the top and pins the Iron Sheik at 3:26. Savage is freaking out, and the way the announce team was positioned, they were like in the crowd, just raised above the floor level. And Savage lifts up his chair and threatens to throw it over all these fans at Ricky Steamboat 100 feet away. It was 1987. I think this would have really heated things up if he had thrown a chair all the way across at Steamboat, but he did not. And that is how this ends in building up their title match for WrestleMania. And then we had the wrap-up, the numerous promos to end this show. First, we had Okerlund with Hulk Hogan, and they looked like they were in a shower with, like, the tiles on the wall.
In the dressing room.
It looked like they were right in the shower. And he refers to the feeling of when he takes on Andre the Giant and his 15 years of undefeated obesity.
Yeah.
What the hell does that mean?
Undefeated obesity.
So his obesity has never lost, ever. There's never been a salad. Okerlund then says, "There will be one man who will no longer be with us after WrestleMania," and introduces Roddy Piper to discuss his retirement match and not a pending death, comparing him to Rocky Marciano, because Roddy Piper is going to go out on top in March of 1987. And Piper cuts just the most babyface of promos, saying how wrestling kept him out of jail. He's going to Hollywood. He always gives 110%. And the WWF production team has put together a tribute video. And let's just say that the production team has come a long way in 28 years. This video consisted of a piano instrumental over top some of Piper's famous moments in the WWF.
Oh, you probably saw the network.
Oh, yes, I did. This was what you were referring to, the Frank Sinatra My Way. Okay.
This is the first My Way video leading up to WrestleMania that they've done.
The Frank Sinatra. This would have been way better with Frank Sinatra than this piano instrumental I heard.
Yeah, okay. Thus you didn't get it before.
I didn't know where you were going with the Frank Sinatra bit.
Gotcha.
Okay, so you watched the non-network version.
Yes.
So what did you think of this video?
I mean, just a bunch of his highlights from his career, you know, of him doing his various things. Some wrestling, so a lot of backstage stuff from Piper's Pit. It was fine. Slow motion, did the job. I fast-forwarded through it, though.
Oh, you Wiz Khalifa'd it.
Yeah.
Then there was the first wrap-up by McMahon and Jesse Ventura. They take a commercial break. Then they have a second wrap-up and plug their next Saturday night's main event, which will be taking place in April. So they can plug Saturday night's main event, but not their biggest pay-per-view that they'll ever run up until that point in time.
Very odd.
So FCC really clamping down on Vince McMahon and his promotion. Mm-hmm. But that was Saturday night's main event. Fun shows to go back and watch, if for nothing else than nostalgia purposes. Mm-hmm. This was not some work rate heavy show, but you got to see a lot of stars. The crowd, whether they sweetened it up afterwards or not, they felt so into everything. It felt like a hot crowd and therefore came across as over stars that you wanted to see at WrestleMania. And these were just big events at the time in 1987 when they would do these specials. And when you have 12 or so million people watching it, you have an incredible opportunity to reach out and create new fans and get them onto the product. And that was the goal of these Saturday night's main event shows, which were effective for a lot of years.
Yeah, and I try to imagine, like, what would be a TV show that would get those numbers today on NBC?
Oh, on NBC? I mean, some of their bigger...
like what?
You know,
like an American Idol, not American Idol, whatever, The Voice. How do you know the viewers for viewership for something like that?
No, they do, you know, over 10 million viewers for those shows.
About the same.
Yeah.
So, I mean, to even think about a pro wrestling show on that level of an audience is very impressive. I can't imagine that today.
Mm-hmm. So there you go. What would you give this show, Mr. Ting?
I give it maybe 4 out of 10.
Whoa, you were not a fan.
I didn't think there was anything that was that great or stood out.
I gave this a 6.5. I thought it did what it needed to do. You know, and I also like the fast pace of it, and maybe that's just me in the era of 3-hour rods where, holy Christ, this just went by so fast, it was almost too fast at times, but they were just cramming so much in there, but I still wouldn't say it was just a blur at the end of things. This wasn't a WCW 2000 show. It was, you know, you knew what your key things were, Hogan, Andre, Savage, Steamboat, and then here are some secondary characters on the show that you'll see at WrestleMania, but you knew what the focused programs were, and Hogan, Andre was the overarching match that they were building to, and they always kept the important things in focus, I felt, on the show. Feedback time over on the Law message board for those of you that watch the show. We'll start off with Bill writing in from Hamilton. Saturday night's main event was a huge turning point in the WWF's impact on popular culture in the 80s. Even watching it years after it aired, it truly felt like a huge deal. Just the overall atmosphere and production definitely made it must-see TV, and the fact it didn't air every week just made it seem all the more special. It was very much kind of how they've modeled the NXT specials after, where they're every couple of months, and when they come around, they feel special because they're big shows for them. Not the same realm of popularity, but it's somewhat, those are kind of how NXT are modeling their big shows
after. It seems like it's a much more cost-effective old-school model.
Both Savage and Steamboat's matches were nothing special in the grand scheme of things, just a way to showcase them on national television before their big showdown. So while forgettable, at least they served the purpose. Savage's feud with Steel, while well-remembered as a popular mid-card feud, does not hold up very well. While Steel was an amusing mid-card comedy babyface, sadly he'll be remembered more for chasing Elizabeth and eating turnbuckles rather than being a rival of Bruno Sammartino's and a crazed heel. Obviously, Spivey was taking the special delivery Jones spot in this show, but the focus on Tito in this feud was a perfect selling point because the Bulldogs' hatred for the Harts and Davis had been well established. Jake and Bundy just seemed like a random pairing, which was commonplace on Saturday night's main event. And of course, the Battle Royal was the reason this show hit such a huge television rating. Andre and Hogan looked strong, as Hogan pretty much tossed Orndorff right out of the main event echelon. And Andre's brutal beatdown of Lanny Poffo was gruesome for national television. When the ring parted and the two squared off, I still get goosebumps. Andre cleanly dumping Hogan and the actual brushing off taunt just told a great story and was a good way to make people believe this is one man Hogan would never beat. While some may question Andre losing here, it really didn't put a dent in WrestleMania's buy rate, did it? And plus, the WWF threw Hercules and even Haynes a bone by showcasing their feud here.
We go to Dwayne in Ireland. This was a decent show to lead into the biggest pay-per-view of all time at that point. Low on match quality, but high in building feuds for WrestleMania 3. Having not seen the show before, I automatically assumed Andre would win the Scott Putski Memorial Battle Royal. Good luck picking a winner from that bunch. So I was pleasantly surprised that he was eliminated shortly after he dumped out Hogan. Despite the strong build for the big matches we'd see at Mania, I couldn't help but notice one issue with this show. WrestleMania wasn't even mentioned once. Not once. Unless this was some crazy edit on the network, you'd have to have been a diehard fan to know when you'd get to see Hogan and Andre, and I guess we explain that.
Chris in Ottawa writes, I remember being very, very little and desperately wanting to see these very special shows on Saturday night, but my parents were having none of that. My dad would always give me a synopsis of what happened on Sunday morning, though. I thought that the Battle Royal and the Savage Steamboat matches built perfectly to their showdowns at the Silver Dome, but it didn't seem like much else on the card did the same. But then again, how many individual matches ever get consistent builds on television from back then? And wasn't it weird that WrestleMania wasn't even mentioned during the show? That they must have had an ad for it during the breaks, right? And then he includes the My Way tribute music video. So if you want to see it in its unfiltered glory, it is up there on the message board with Gene Okerlund throwing to the Frank Sinatra piece on Roddy Piper.
We got a Brad from Whitby who we should thank along with our other very generous members of the board.
Yes, we had our it was like the big egg at Survivor Series in 1990, but it wasn't the gobbledygooker that came out of this big box.
Yes.
But thank you very much for all of you who contributed to that gift.
So go back to Monday night's show. Listen to that. We got a Brad from Whitby who says, the production of this show was radical, man. Why, oh, why doesn't every wrestler today have their own logo? These were incredible. The only thing better would be promos inside of logos, and they nailed that too with the Hart Foundation. If we could combine the logos, promos, and 1 hour length of this show with the better wrestling quality of today, I would be watching WWE every week. The animal Elizabeth ankle really creeped me out. I don't understand why it was so over. What were the fans thinking George was going to do to Elizabeth if he won and got her alone? I always find on every single show with Jesse Ventura on commentary that I would take Ventura's side on almost every argument. Vince even came off as the heel in the Bundy-Jake match. Does King Kong Bundy have eyebrows? Great show.
Ian from Swatham, England. Unlike previous years, the Saturday night's main event before WrestleMania 3 wouldn't give us that iconic angle that could be referenced for years when discussing that year's WrestleMania. Hogan was eliminated by Andre in the Ho-Hum Battle Royal, which was really only notable for the inclusion of the original Smash Moondog Rex. Savage and Steel had a nothing match over who got to be the possessor of Elizabeth, as I suddenly felt cheap even watching the show. I'm confused. Were we supposed to cheer for George Steel to kidnap the poor babyface woman who was terrified of him? Finally, the format of the show seemed all over the place. The final match ended with 7 minutes to go in the broadcast, and promos from Hogan and Piper actually finishing the show. There wasn't even any real mention of Adrian Adonis, as the focus was solely on Piper leaving pro wrestling in what was easily the weirdest video montage ever. 4 throwing lifeguard chairs out of 10. Well, Saturday night's main event was also structured very differently. I mean, it wasn't, you know, your typical you build to your closing angle at the end of the show, which is how Raw has always been, where people are now accustomed to that overrun segment featuring the big moment on the show. I mean, this is starting at 11:35 on a Saturday night. Typically, they would put something big on at the start to grab people. Right. And
it's like SNL.
It, very much so. I mean, and the end would be the Wayne's World slot. So it was just structured differently in that regard. But the big angle, if you want to talk about it, it was the Hogan Andre deal on Piper's Pit. That was the angle to set up WrestleMania, and it was a huge success, obviously.
Okay, we go to Darren from Hamilton, Ohio.
Hamilton, Ohio.
Saturday night's main event were by far the best wrestling on TV. They always felt special. Savage versus Animal for Liz was an okay match. The best thing about it was Savage using a lifeguard chair on George to save his manager and his IC belt. I love that Jesse made it clear that it was still for the belt as well. Savage during his promo held his IC belt tight and kissed it, showing how the IC belt had a meaning back then. The Battle Royal served its purpose, showing Andre looking more aggressive and strong. He should have won the event. Overall, a decent show.
And finally, from David Duffenberg, I'm pretty sure I could have went to my parents and found the original airing of this on tape, but sadly I don't have a working VCR. Would have loved to review the commercials of that era. It was odd to me how there wasn't much of a mention of WrestleMania on this show. It was only a couple of weeks away, and they hadn't even announced that it'd be Hogan versus Andre on that show at all. They just kept mentioning when Hogan and Andre would get to go against each other one-on-one. Steamboat and Savage had a lot of interaction, but nothing was mentioned about WrestleMania there either. Back in those days, I didn't mind seeing all the fuck finishes for the match as I was just a kid, but now they just drive me crazy. Steamboat winning was the only clean victory on the whole show. Roberts got himself DQ'd for no apparent reason, then still hits the DDT on Bundy. Couldn't he have just had Bundy lose, as he had to look strong against the midgets? Even the Battle Royal had interference at the ending of it. Annoying finishes aside, the show still entertained, as it was a great visit down memory lane. Macho Man in those jeans was definitely a huge spotlight on how awful wrestlers dressed in the 80s. I would have to give the Putski Award to Hercules. I'll give this show a solid 6 out of 10. Well, there you have it, folks. A trip down memory lane to Saturday night's main event from March of 1987. And next week, Mr. Ting, we will review the show that could not be uttered on Saturday night's main event, WrestleMania 3.
It's a big one.
It is a big one. And I think next week, you know, lots of people are going to leave their feedback about, you know, how great Savage Steamboat was. I want to hear people's own kind of personal memories of the show, whether you watched it live that day, because this is a very historic show in WWF history. And if you were watching at the time, I'd be curious where you watched it, what your memories were from that time in March of 1987. I know that Way and his family, they ordered it on pay-per-view. Is that not correct?
Yes, in Hong Kong, that's what we would always do.
It wasn't even available on pay-per-view in Canada at that point. You have to, like, go watch it on closed circuit here.
Yeah.
So, of course, what am I telling you that for? You guys have to pack up the car and go to your local movie theater to watch this, right?
We downloaded it, actually.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah. Wow. From what? Like, the mail?
Yeah, whatever. iTunes. Man, whatever they have.
Just really ahead of the curve at that time in 1987. So next week we will review WrestleMania 3 from 1987. And above that, anything else to add, Mr. Ting?
We have a number of things.
Why don't you let us know about the contest that's going on, the Review of Raw theme song contest.
We're asking everybody, all of you musically talented and musically inclined out there listening to us, to help us make a theme song for our Raw Review podcast, Review of Raw. And basically, all the details are on the board. We're asking for original content, original songs. So unfortunately, that means no sampling of any kind. But you can, of course, sample our voices if you want. But, you know, nothing, something to the point, something, you know, that would sound appropriate for our show. And this is your chance to get to basically, you know, create the sound of our show.
A huge responsibility that we are putting on the shoulders of you, the listener. So you have a couple of weeks to still submit your entries. The deadline will be Monday, April the 6th, and we will be playing the winning song to kick off that night's Review of Raw, and then we'll go through the rest of the entries on the show. So Monday, April the 6th, you still have plenty of time to come up with your selection and send it in to us. So that is all coming up over the next couple of weeks. Of course, up at liveaudiowrestling.com, we have all of our regular shows up. A new Bauer and Pollock will be coming out Wednesday night. We've got What's Next later this week, the MMA Report, Review and Impact drops on Saturday nights, and then Sunday night on the Law, 11 p.m. Eastern, we are scheduled to be joined by Dean Ambrose for the first time. So we will be chatting with him Sunday night leading into WrestleMania, which is next week. And by the time you hear this week's show, coming up next week with our review of WrestleMania 3, we will be in San Jose. So lots of stuff coming up over the next couple of weeks during WrestleMania time. So that is all for us. We will let Vince McMahon and his classic call take us out.
From behind now, watch this. Andre comes up from behind, grabs him by the hair, yanks him back to the middle of the ring. Andre rears back with that 500-pound frame and rams that enormous head into Hulk Hogan. Hogan, reeling from the blow, Andre gives him a toss out of the ring, and I must agree with you with these as the Hulkster rams his back on the apron to the outside. And look at this. Look at the way Andre responds to Hogan's exit, as if he's just so much garbage. Look at it.
And now the end is near, and so I face
garbage,
the final curtain. My friend, I'll say it clear,
garbage,
I'll state my case, of which I'm certain. I've lived a life that's full,
so much garbage.
I traveled each and every highway and more, much more than this,
garbage.
I did it my way. Regrets, I've had a few, but then again, too few to mention. I did what I had to do, saw it through without exemption. I planned each charted course, each careful step along the byway, and more, much more than this, I did it my way. Yes, there were times, I'm sure you knew, when I bit off more than I could chew.